Welcome back to the Wolf of Queen Street podcast series. Welcome back to the video or the audio series. But before we get started in today's show, I just want to do a shout out to my sponsors. Today's show is sponsored by JobSearchQLD.com. That's JobSearchQLD.com. JobSearch Queensland helps you get into your ideal job quicker so you can save time, feel happier, and earn more money. And if this is something you need help with or something you just need guidance with about getting back into the career or getting some insights on how to get ahead in this space where 2020 threw most of us on our ass, then go for JobSearchQLD.com. But today I'm pretty stoked about having the couple that's sitting in front of me at the moment on the show, Belinda and Stephen. I met Belinda about a month or so ago at a Wealth Mentors program, herself being a property investor mentor, and just hearing her story and what she went through and what she's trying to achieve and how her life has changed in the game of property with a really intriguing background, which had nothing to do with property, and has found herself now and has gone from what a lot of people would love to be is originally started as a beginner property investor to pretty much doing property investment herself and Stephen as full-time investors, professionals, as you say, and living their lives and having the freedom that property brings with it. So Belinda and Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lawrence. Nice to be here.
Great. So just get into it first, Belinda. So as I said, you know, your background, I think it would be one of the coolest backgrounds of anyone I've had on my show, right? So fundamentally, you were a Top Gun pilot.
Yeah. I have trained the next generation of Air Force pilots in Australia for much of my career.
How's your career? But you yourself also flew, did you not?
Yeah. So I spent 15 years in the Royal Australian Air Force, went through pilot selection, was ultimately successful, and graduated with my wings in 2007. Yep. And then I went on to fly tactical transport missions all over Australia and internationally as well.
You know, it's, I can't imagine. I know your stories that you told us when I met you about the extreme stuff and the alpha and the dominance, you know. So I said to Belinda, and I think I came home that night and said to my wife, I go, I've met this lady today, and she's one of the women that scares the living shit out of me, just with the alpha. And there's very few people. And I see she's looking over at Stephen because I'm sure Stephen has a great understanding of what that is and the power of that alpha. But I've been told by Belinda that both of you are alphas in the sense of. So I would love to know, Stephen, you know, I know the backstory of you guys meeting, but I would love to know just in a relationship, irrespective of the work and the business, everything else, how does two alphas live under one roof?
I think it comes down to my own sense of self-confidence. We've probably got in this house one actual pilot and then one who actually thinks they could be a pilot if they actually wanted to.
and that depends where you ask, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. So I don't know. My sense of self-belief and confidence, you know, I've been forged in fire through my own life experience, but mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very much yin and yang. I'm a go with the flow, should we ride all work out, because that's probably what my life experiences has taught me, and Belle's training and life experience has said plan, execute, you know, understand all risks.
Flawlessly, apply discipline, work hard.
And there's no wiggle room, right? There's absolutely no wiggle room. Everything's on that line. And you shouldn't even get close to the line.
Yeah, that's right. For myself or anyone else.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I love that. So one thing is, you know, as we want to talk about property today and property investment, take me through sort of the starting point of the property game for both of you in the, as a couple, when you started of getting to your first place with a first deal, and you know, what got you into that?
Well, I think we've actually got half a step back from that. Mm-hmm,
totally.
We had to get it all wrong first to figure out that we needed to be doing something differently.
Yep.
And that probably does start with my career to a degree. Mm-hmm. As fantastic as it is to be rocking up to work each day and busting through the clouds in a four-ship or doing some kind of formation, high-low tactical simulation, it's also exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately I felt unsustainable at that rate. And at the point I met Steve and we sort of started having a family, I realized I couldn't give everything I had to give to work and have enough left over for, you know, ultimately someone I found that I actually wanted to spend the rest of my life with and not spend my life flying away from. So something had to change, and we had a look at how we were doing life now and decided that that had to change. And so to give ourselves some time to make decisions, we took long service leave, and Steve actually resigned from his work, and we took off around the world crewing on other people's yachts to figure out what we wanted to do with our lives.
Yeah.
But from a practical standpoint, I think, you know, you're shaped by the attitudes and values that you grow up with. You know, both of our respective parents, their wealth came from a couple of property decisions, you know, in their lives, buying a house, paying it off for 20 or 30 years. So I think, you know, we just naturally gravitated to that. We both had a house each effectively when we came together, because that was just, I think, what the expectation was. You go out, you get a job, get a career, buy a house, work for 20, 30 years and pay it off. But I think the culmination of our life experience and trying to figure out what we wanted and I guess realizing that we could maybe afford some of the things that are priceless, like time, family, that we needed to learn how to do property rather than just copying what our folks had done, maybe. Yeah,
it's true, right? So anyone that's listening or watching at the moment, you know, same with my parents. I grew up, my parents bought multiple properties as investments, and it was the long-term, you know, long-term play. All of us generations, our parents did the same sort of stuff. Buy it, in 30 years time, you're going to sell it, and you know, you're going to cash it up at that stage or at retirement and so forth. But I know there's a new way to do it. Not a new way, there's the different way to do it, and it's more the right way to do it, depending on who you ask. And I support this model, and I know both of you do, and it's the models I'm taking off your mentorship. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, is you guys getting into that sort of property, that property space, and, you know, starting into it and then going and further and becoming professional in it, in that sense. But what is the sort of stuff that's differently from your ways of getting into property and thinking about it compared to my parents and your parents 20 or 30 years ago when, you know, they were in the game?
I guess this comes down to some of the things we learned when we went from just, we're going to buy houses and they're going to go up in value and we're going to make money. What ultimately happened to our first couple of properties is we lost a lot of money. And and that's when we realized that we needed to get better at the game and find somebody that teaches us the game. And like you say, step us up from, you know, a bit of good luck in the right, you know, the right house in the right suburb to actually doing it professionally. So what were some of the biggest realizations we had over that time period?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we only lost money because we chose to sell and we chose to break out of that strategy of buying it and sitting on it for 20 years, you know, because in theory, if we had just held on to it, it would have eventually turned, but we just bought and you know, had that retraction. But I think it was, you know, really about, we challenged ourselves to go, is there another way? Because if no one had challenged you, or if you hadn't asked that question of yourself, you would have just gone on your merry way working in a job for 20 years and you wouldn't have gone looking for that recipe. And I think that's what we realized, that we needed someone, you know, like figuring out how to bake a cake. You keep doing it over and over and eventually you probably get it right, but you could also pay and buy a cookbook and leverage off someone who's, you know, that's their trade, their skill, they've passed it on, you know, and I think we just went looking for a recipe.
I think that's probably the biggest mental hurdle for us to get over initially, was that if you want to be successful at something, you pay someone who's already successful to teach you how to do what they just did.
Pretty much. That's what mentorship is.
Yeah, that's a huge thing to get over when you're sitting there and someone's saying, well, sure, I can teach you that, but it's going to cost you X.
And it took us three different, you know, or just organizations, three different models to find the one that, that fit us. But I guess it, you know, it ultimately starts with, you got to figure out what your goal is, right? And it makes it easy when you know what you're aiming for, you know, and then you can start to work backwards from there. This is what I want. Okay. Now I've got to do a calculation of how I get it, break it up into steps. Then someone can teach you the recipe to fit what you're trying to do, because there's probably multiple paths to the same place, right? That's
correct. I totally agree with what you said, Stephen, as well as Belinda. You know, mentorship is a key thing. What we do in our world at the moment is we are, and people think I'm crazy, and I speak to a lot of friends that I'm trying to help and just give them some guidance in the property space. We are in a once in a generation time period in New Zealand, specifically around property at the moment. Everyone's thinking it's a bubble. Everyone thinks it's going to burst, but literally it's a moment of the next 18 months to 2 years to get into it. And a lot of people are struggling because they're like, hey, I already own a home and this is fine. I'm getting my 5%, you know, capital gain every week, but so is everyone else. So you're not actually getting anything different realistically and stuff like that. But I think the mind shift that I actually went through, you know, I've been in property for 10 years, did okay, not as successful as I should have. But I think the big mind shift that came from it was just understanding the difference of buying property and holding for capital gain and buying property to make you cash flow from the front and make you money as you sit there from day one. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I wish I knew on day one, 10 years ago, of buying it. Yeah, let there be capital gain, but let this business and this property make me cash, because every education that I got raised with, and I can imagine the same as you guys did originally, was buy a property, let it break even, let it lose money, write it off against tax, 20 years time, you know. I did the same. I've got a couple that I bought and it was like, sweet, I'm losing money a month. My accountant, it's tax deductible, it's fine. Then they brought a new law in New Zealand that you couldn't write it off against your personal income. So it gets a bit challenging. But that's the sort of mentality that even people I still know are still doing. They're buying properties, going, hey, it's 10 years, we'll wait, and then we'll double our money. And I think it's that mindset of knowing at the moment that anyone that wants to get in the game needs to think that way compared to buy and hold and what I call white knuckle while you're losing money.
Well, I absolutely agree, Lawrence, that having a positively cash flowing property is absolutely key to holding it without white knuckles, as you say. And can I just use the current environment as an example? The number of people that may have been holding property at a monthly loss, that whose jobs have been put in jeopardy by this coronavirus crisis, may lead to them having to sell properties or mortgagee sales.
Yep.
If they had a positive cash flow property from the outset whose costs take care of itself, then they don't put themselves in that situation regardless of your current employment contract.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So anyone's listening going, great. Okay. So to protect myself, getting as a beginner, I need to make sure I'm buying cash flow positive properties compared to buying Auckland properties that are way overpriced and never cash flow positive, but that's me just taking the piss out of Auckland. But I live in it. But anyway, so to anyone that's listening at the moment, what is the most simple way anyone can look at a property and, you know, off the bat and sort of one or two steps and say, this one could have potential for cash flow? What's the sort of rules that yourself, Belinda and Stephen have without going into depth of your 10 steps? So sort of would it be the gross yield straight off the bat? Would it be, you know, net yield? What would you be looking at?
Well, for start with, I'd say change your mental gears from buying a property that you want or you like.
Here we go.
Because that's just, for most of us, not going to give a positive yield, certainly for my expensive champagne tastes. So,
it's a business, right? And so you've got to take emotion out of it, and it's actually probably what grew us the most. You know, with two alphas in the house, you can imagine if it's like, well, I think this, well, I think this, and it's like, you know, if we hadn't learned to do a calculation where there was no thinking, no opinion in it, it's like, does the calculation balance? Does the equation balance? Yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Okay, bye. You know, like that's probably when you're talking about taking that step from just being that investor long term, not really thinking it through, to going, we got to be able to do a calculation. We've got to treat it like a business. It needs income. It needs, you've got expenses. So
my tip to anybody looking for positive cash flow is actually start in the regions, because your lower buy-in prices are more likely to yield the higher rents comparative to the buy-in price. So that was probably the first step, was getting away from any kind of centres and going out into the smaller places.
For me, it was always, you know, potential. And really what we're talking about now is manufactured growth.
Yep.
And that's, it's either you've manufactured the growth in the equity, the value of the place by improving it, or you've manufactured the growth in the income because you've improved it, it rents for a higher amount, you know, whatever that. So for me, it's, I'm always attracted to probably a house that I think has that potential, you know, where it's hasn't been renovated since the 60s or 70s, and you know, and you can see that, right? Because that offers the opportunity, right, where if this is what it looks like now, imagine if we made it look better, would someone want to live there more, would the market value it more, whatever it might be. So that's probably where what catches my eye.
No, I totally agree. You know, both you're talking about, Belinda talking about the regions, Stephen talking about the value add. So just to bring it back a little bit, I was throwing the point to anyone's listening or watching, when we're talking about, you know, the property investment, looking at it, and we're talking about the cash flow potential, doesn't mean it's necessarily positive, is a simple thing I tell a lot of people, and, you know, Belinda will have her own way, Stephen will have his way. It's always within sort of 95% of the similar way as you go into it. I believe Belinda will be a lot more in depth than I would, but I say to a lot of people straight off back, and an easy example is just the gross yield calculator, which is fundamentally the annual rent that the property will return over the purchase price, which gives you a percentage. That will give you a percentage of 4%, 5%, 7% or 8%. And normally this is a number that property investors in the beginning or property across the board will say, hey, what's the gross yield in the property? And they'll throw a number out there. Now, where hard to understand this from a simple point of view without going further in depth is, if a property has gross yield, let's just use a flat example of 6%, and New Zealand mortgages are at 5%, you've only got 1% of potential cash flow that you're clearing on that property. And that doesn't include any of your annual expenses, your property management fees, all the maintenance fees and stuff like that. So realistically, it's going to be negative. But in today's society where we are at the moment, it's 1.994 what's one of the banks in New Zealand, 2.4 to 2.55 for most of the mainstream banks. And if you can get 6.5 or 7% gross yield, you're making about 4 to 4.5% and then excluding expenses. So there can be potential for the cash flow. Very simple and high level way to look at a property. It's not the only way you should add. You should do further calculations. But just when I was talking about the beginning, from beginning investors, that's how you can look at something on paper and going, there will be potential for positive cash flow. And then you do more calculations afterwards.
Yeah, definitely, Lawrence. We use that calculation to assess whether a property is worth looking at in more detail.
Correct. That is the first checkbox that goes on. And I spoke to a friend just recently, and it spoke, took him through that. And he's like, oh my goodness, this has literally just cut my trade me time looking at properties like in half, because he was looking at all these ones and he sent me these ones. He's like, Lawrence, look, this looks like a great deal. And I'm like, what did that checkbox look? And that checkbox was nowhere near, the gross yield was nowhere near what it should have been from a value point of view. So there's no point in going to the second step of looking into it. Mm-hmm. And as you said as well, you know, Belinda, is the regions are a great place for anyone that's thinking about properties. As you said, is lower price point, but the rent fundamentally doesn't naturally go lower with it. So rent itself still holds. You know, you're not going to be, if you're buying a $200,000 house, the house isn't going to be renting at $40 a week. It's just it's not the way. Is it still has a relatively sometimes higher rent point than Auckland, that's way overpriced, and so forth as well. And then Stephen, you're talking about the value to properties is, and to anyone that's listening, is align yourself value growth when you buy a property or value in the buy itself. And I would love Stephen, for you or for Belinda, to sort of explain the term value in the buy.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is, I guess sometimes I hear it by below market value, mm-hmm. right? But making the value in the buy is going, when I purchase it, there is the, in that purchase or in the ability to improve it, room to make value, you know.
So I think there's two ways to do it, right? You can either buy it underneath the market value. So the moment you've settled on the contract, you could resell it higher if you wanted. That's mm-hmm. not why you buy them, but it means there's equity in it as you bought it. Or the other way is to have thought of a strategy to be able to add money to it within the next couple of months.
Does
that make it clear? Yep.
Totally does.
That's I'll give exactly. you an example.
Yep, please do. One
of my favorite ways mm-hmm. of making sure there's money in the buy is finding a house that's 2-bedroom that could be 3. Because the moment 2 becomes 3 bedrooms, the rent goes up, which means the valuation based on rental income goes up, but also it's now appealing to a wider market of people that want to rent 3-bedroom houses. So you've added instant equity.
Yeah, no, that's a great way, you know, thinking outside the box. And that's one of the other things I think that's underlined from people that's property investors for beginners, let's use it in that box, and professional investors is thinking outside the box at the moment. So someone that's, I won't mention the name, Belinda, but you'll be aware of them through my circles, sent me something the other day and said, hey, I'm looking to buy something that's naturally on the water. And I want to put it on the land. And I wonder if this could work as an investment property. So I'm intrigued to see what it's going to come on. But definitely I went back and said, that is thinking way outside the box. Not that most people would, and you know, it might not come to anything, but it's intriguing how when I speak to people like yourselves that are in the game, you come up with these ideas of buy this property, do this and that with it, that I step back and go, I never thought of it. You know, I never thought of buying a 5-bedroom house and converting it into a multi-tenanted 5 individual rooms. You know, some people think about, splitting a top and bottom and making sure it's, as long as it's compliant and having a 3-bedroom upstairs and a 2-bedroom upstairs, because the combined rent could be better than 1 5-bedroom house. You know, and it's those sort of things that people lack the knowledge of and need help.
Yeah. And you might not take on projects like that in your first deal.
Not at all.
You might go, well, let's start with just a house that, has a kitchen from the 60s or 70s mm-hmm. and bathroom and, you know, carpet and needs a paint, you know, needs a freshen up to make it more livable. But they're the sort of things, because, you know, it's a pretty competitive market out there. And so your first challenge is actually to get the deal. And if you're out there looking at houses that are lovely, nice, done up, new kitchens, new everything, you know you're competing with the first homeowners. You know you're competing with people who are putting emotion into their decision. And in a lot of cases, they'll drive the price up because they're willing to pay for their memories. They're willing to pay for that space that they want to call a home. And yep. so,
and a pretty garden with a nice white picket fence.
But with investors, you're looking at maybe something different. And so therefore in that very first stage, you don't need to connect with the memory of a place. So you might find.
Yeah. Hopefully you don't at all, because then that becomes dangerous, right? By buying with potential memories. You guys mentioned it earlier and I didn't drop it in, but my wife gets very emotional about properties when we buy it and gets, you know, goes into it. So over the last couple of years, she's just stepped away and then said, okay, you go and look and then bring it back when you found, a deal or something. And, you know, cause otherwise we look in and she'll go, I don't like this neighborhood, or I don't like the house, or the color's rubbish, or I don't like the kitchen. And it's, well, fundamentally, it's not about that stuff. Like you said, Stephen, you said earlier, it's about a number. And I think that's one of the big mind shifts as well, is when you look at a property, when I look at a property, I literally just see a number. Yeah. I see my calculations and it spits out a magical number at the bottom. And if it's in that box of that magical number, I go, great. I don't care if the house is pink, purple, blue. If there's lizards living inside or a crocodile, I'm going to buy it, or I'm going to try and buy it, right? Where other people look at it and go, no, I don't like the pink paint or the red paint or that stuff. It looks shit. So then they step away from it. But that's sort of, again, that mindship of beginning investors and professional investors. They don't care what it looks like in or what neighborhood, as long as their numbers work out correctly.
If I see pink paint or lime green paint, I'm there.
I
know that most people won't.
Or even better, a house that smells.
Mm-hmm.
If it smells really bad, people don't want to buy it, and they don't see the potential underneath the smell. I love my smelly cat houses.
I did a handful of years ago. I had a business partner. We flipped properties in Auckland. It was a great time to do it, and it was fun for about 3 years. It's such a passion to actually flip compared to invest sort of longer. But I have this knack, and I still do it to this day, and the wife hates it. And I walk into a house, and in my back of my mind, I'm like, I want to buy this house. But there's like 20 other people walking in through it. And I'll be walking, and I'll chat to the agent, and I'll chat to everyone else so that people can roughly see. I know a little bit of what's going on, and I'll stand there, and I'll look for like a crack, and I go, oh, yeah, the roof's moved. Look, there's a crack in the roof. And I'll go, oh, no, there's moisture in the floor. Look, there's a lot of water damage or something. And you can see all the people looking around and going, he knows what he's doing, so we should leave. I don't think we should buy it. And funny enough, I've done that a few times, and I bought the house a few times. Because I'll just talk out to myself, going, oh, look, that. And people believe, right? But that's why you need people to help you. Because it's idiots and schmucks like me. We just randomly throw stuff out there and people believe it while I'm in the house.
I think something that probably helped us with detaching that emotion from the purchase was that we did all our investing from Perth for the first year.
Yep.
So I still haven't seen in some of our properties is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It was numbers on a spreadsheet, phone calls with agents and builders. There was no personal attachment.
It does
really
lead,
helped.
Yeah, that does obviously then lead on to your team and who's giving you advice. Mm. You know,
yep.
whose advice are you taking about what you've got to spend, what potential is there? You know, and
we bought one house. So this is my particular pet. After a phone call with my builder who had just been through it, and you know, he gave me a summary of you know this, that, and the other big renovation, blah blah blah. And at the end of the conversation, I said, "Mate, would you buy it?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Tomorrow, if I had the money." I said, "All right." And we went unconditional under contract the next day.
Yep. And that's, you know, I love the mention you said there, Stephen. There's a couple of points I want to go into, and we spoke about the numbers a little bit, but you said about who's giving you the guidance. So if you don't necessarily have mentorship, as in you don't have an organization, for example, that you've gone to, like Belinda has, and that's part of at the moment, or I've gone to and seen mentorship as well, is you can still have what we call a power team or your strengths team or your consulting team around you. Sort of people like your property managers, your property accountant, or your property broker. And there's certain key points in there that, as Stephen said, is you can contact them and say, is this right? Do I know this knowledge? Do you have this stuff to provide to me so I can work everything out? And someone that's fundamentally working for you. So they're not going to go, hey, it's a great house. Look, like the real estate agent trying to sell it to you. It's going to tell you it's a brilliant house. You know, it's a great neighborhood for kids. You want a property manager in that area that's, you know, fundamentally only going to get the job and keep the job if what they say to you is true. So they're going to go, hey, it's a decent house. The rent's a little bit lower than normal. It's not the great place for families, because if they sell you the gold standard and you buy it and you bring them on and it's a shitty standard, that property manager is not going to be around long, and people are going to hear that they don't know what they're telling. You know, so it's having that team around to guide you as well.
Yeah. And as far as the property manager goes, they're great people to get advice from, because as soon as you buy the house, you're giving it to them to rent. And if they can't rent it, their advice means nothing. They know that it's about to become their problem. So they give good advice.
In a buy and hold strategy, you know, they're your link to income, right? Because they're the ones that are driving it. So you know, often it'd be like the builder would say, you need this, this, and this. And then you talk to the property manager and you're like, if I do this, will it get me more money
per
week? And he's like, or she, sorry, there would be no, you know, but that they'll also know they want to make their job easier. So they want to get, you know, as good a tenant as possible. Yeah. And if they're saying, well, yeah, if you did do those carpets or if you did modernize that a little bit, it will help me attract the right type of tenant for, you know, for your property. They're happy with the house, you know, less problems, less calls. So, you know, I often, you know, we would defer to what the property manager is saying for us. And you know, if you don't have that existing relationship, you start building it with two or three, and then you start to see the pattern, you know, there's a path to it.
I guess, again, to give an example, Lawrence, it would be like, if you put in a nice new kitchen, that is really valued by people who want to live in the house. That is something tenants value. But fully landscaping a garden probably isn't something they value, because then they have to renovate it.
Yeah.
You know, so you choose where to spend your money when you're renovating to ensure a quality, you attract a quality tenant and that they're happy in the property.
Yeah, and again, it comes back onto understanding nothing emotional about the decision, understanding what I call my power team, like you said, the property manager to tell me, because I've got a current property and I was like, when I went through it, I bought it sight unseen, finally went around it to actually check it at the end before the tenant moved in, and I went, oh, I should update this and update that item in the house. I feel it needs a little bit of renovation in this space. And the property manager turned around to me and said, no, in this neighborhood and in this area, that is totally acceptable. You'll be spending money that's bringing no value back to you. So you're going to spend $2,000, $4,000, and your rent's not going to change. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I was leaving something shit. I just thought, okay, I'll bring it up to a top class standard. And they're like, no, you don't need that space. And that's where sort of your power team and the people that you go out and consult with can really tell you, you know, tell you and help you save money in the long term.
And it's a trap that, like say, people can fall into, especially if they're trying to like manage the product or project themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, they get, you can't turn off that emotion, right?
That probably brings up something that you said right at the start, Lawrence, is one of the big lessons, some of the lessons we've learned along our journey. That's one of them. It's not your area of expertise. Yep. Don't you do it. Outsource it. Have someone else do it. Don't try and manage your own properties. You're not a property manager.
Yep.
You know, that's far better off outsourced so that you can spend your time looking for the right property to buy. So I couldn't agree more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I love it. One thing I wanted to cover off, you know, coming up to the sort of the end part of the show, is I wanted to actually talk to both of you at the moment. I know Belinda and Stephen, you guys have just come through a really great property deal that you've done. I would love to know if you could just give us sort of a high level shot of what you looked at, what did you see, and what you're looking at doing with a sort of a small property deal that you found.
I'm having a bit of a chuckle because this is probably very typical of Stephen and I. We've gone from, you know, a handful of rental properties that, you know, that are cash flowing well and working for us. And then the deal we got under contract about this time last year was a motel with potential for somewhere between 13 and 18 dwellings, all in one plot of land, currently being used commercially as a motel. And we thought, well, why not give it a crack? And I think that's a little bit flippant. There was about 3 months worth of due diligence and council meetings and engineering reports and all that kind of thing that went into it. But Stephen was absolutely fundamental to that, because there were times where I was just like, there's no way we can do this. There's no way we can get enough money together. There's no way we're going to go under contract. And Stephen's like, it's not over till it's over. Keep trying.
Yeah, I like the... Just because you don't know how doesn't mean it's not possible. And that was a lesson that we had not long before we started to get educated, is because if just because no one's told you it's possible, or you haven't figured out all the ways to get there, doesn't mean you can't get there. And so it shouldn't be your block, but...
Well, put it this way, it came down to the wire because less than a week before declaring unconditional on the contract, we were $500,000 short of settling it.
That would give people a little bit of stress. Most people.
Only if you choose stress. Something I like to say is that, you know, in my previous job, if you screw up, you die.
Yeah.
In this job, if you screw up, you just might not make quite as much money as you thought you were going to. Mm-hmm. So we took it all the way down to the wire, and actually I was on the phone with the accountant 6 minutes before we had to declare, the broker and the accountant together 6 minutes before we had to declare, because we still hadn't sorted everything out. And I was on the phone with the solicitor 3 minutes before we had to declare, and she was quite cross. I can't believe you've left this to the last minute. You're lucky I've written the email already and it's ready to send it. Are you declaring? I'm like, yes, we declared. Yeah, I wasn't even with Stephen at the time. I rang him up a bit later and went, by the way, we just went unconditional on a multi-million-dollar motel that we've now got to make work.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's that old adage, you don't get confidence from not doing something, right? Mm-hmm. And so for us, we'd had a few deals, you know, we knew our recipe, we got familiar with the area that we were, you know, we're investing in. So we had some confidence. We knew what the market needed, you know, the product that was in demand. And so.
There was nothing different about this one really, except that it was 10 times bigger, which was absolutely terrifying.
But yeah, again, it's.
And for a Topcom pilot and trainer to say something is terrifying, scares the living shit out of me, because to a normal human, it'll be like literally like, you know, the worst day of their life, you know, for you to go, it was terrifying.
Well, mate, it's only money at the end of the day,
it's
not
life. Miss out on a deal, and that's, it's that, you know, you can't be afraid to miss out on deals. No doubt you've, you know, I think for every you know, deal or offer we made, you know, we probably only were getting one in five, maybe one in 10 to start off with. But what we started to learn is it's like, okay, we got better at that strike rate. You got better at understanding how to make a win-win deal for you and the, you know, and the vendor. And we started to, you know, to learn how to actually get that deal across the line more regularly. But
yeah.
You know, I just wanted to ask at the end, talking about those deals, I was actually going to raise a point about, you know, one thing as well. The difference was in the beginning stage as an investor, you go, oh, it's a nice, there's a house or an apartment or whatever it is. I do an offer, wait for the offer, and then, you know, a week or 2 weeks later, or however the time period is, you can come back and it's yay or nay, and you go on in the next journey 3 or 4 weeks later. Investors as a profession, and I think, Belinda, when I was around with you guys and Wealth Mentors, and someone said, is that you will have multiple offers concurrent going, and we'll easily do over 50 offers, for example, a year. And to me, I went, what? How do you do multiple offers? How do you do multiple offers at one stage? And again, as a beginner mind, didn't think it through, going, yeah, you can do multiple offers, because at the end of the day, you can say no. Or you don't really want to say no if you get an offer, if you get a house under contract, or more than one at a stage. And it's just understanding when that does happen, what your options are. And we won't go into those options, because that's some of the cool tips and tricks of mentorship and education that's provided, especially that from Belinda that does at Wealth Mentors, about when you get more than one under contract and you run out of money, how do you say how do you get that sorted? So anyone that's intrigued about that will have to find out from Belinda herself. So yeah. I, funny enough, found myself in a situation like that about a week ago. And just because of timing and everything going, I stepped away. I could have possibly looked at going further down the track, but I had a contract that it was a backup contract and it took its time. I went and did another contract. And the second contract got accepted, all sorted. And then the backup contract came back a month later and went, oh, the first contract fell over. You've currently got this contract now. I went, oh, shit, I wasn't expecting it to come back.
Yeah, and, well, I'd rather have it than not want it, than want it and not have it.
Correct. So as much as I was like, oh, I lost out, I was like, hey, at that moment, you know, unless I just didn't have the time, energy and everything else. And I was happy with my current situation. So it was all good. But before we end off today's show, Stephen and Belinda, I just wanted to ask one thing. Is there any one last insight you'd love to leave our listeners or watchers with thinking about property at the moment?
Don't wait. Mm-hmm. You always think you'll get to it or you'll get your life sorted and then you'll buy a house. There's no good time to get into the property market or to start getting educated about it. We've done everything we've done during the process of having full-time careers at different times and having our two daughters, and there have been some long nights of, you know, property study after putting children to bed, but just start.
Mm-hmm.
Just start. The best time to plant a tree was always 20 years ago. The second best time is today.
Yeah. Look, for me, it's always about, you don't need to have all the answers to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to know the how. You know, first get the deal, then figure out how to make it work. And if it doesn't, let it go and don't be afraid of that. And then once you've, you know, got the deal and you know how to make it work, and then you manage it. And in those steps, not try to figure out all the management stuff mm-hmm. when you haven't even got the deal yet. You waste time and effort that, you know, isn't effective use of your time if you're trying to solve all the problems that you don't even know whether you're going to have yet.
Yep. I love that. Thanks, Belinda and Stephen, for those last insights. And to anyone else, you know, that's listening, we're having a conversation here talking about property. You know, we understand it. They understand it way better than I do. Don't get me wrong. But so a lot of people just coming across, you might go, hey, it's still very educational. It's still very confusing to me. It is, unfortunately. Property in the beginning is scary. It's petrifying. You have no idea. You want to buy something for $1 million. You don't understand if it's going to be, if people are like, hey, what happens if I don't have a tenant and then I lose money and I lose my job and having all the, they don't understand that whole package. That's where you need the guidance we've spoken about, either the mentorship, the education to show you all of that stuff and to show that when you make that decision, it's fundamentally, no matter what, it is a good decision. And you protected, you're protecting yourself and you got cash flow. So I can't imagine, you know, there would have been so many people, unfortunately, New Zealand this year, as we said, that made bad property deals that have to get rid of it. But there've been also a lot of people in New Zealand that during COVID and not actually being employed because of what it's done to the world, but they survived because of the properties bringing in the cash flow. And all that stuff's out there, that education's out there, that mentorship's out there. And that's where, you know, you need to go out and get that education and change your lives and do it now, as Belinda said. And, you know, a big thing you can do it is you can see and learn from Belinda directly. I mean, that's where I met her, was at Wealth Mentors, where they do every 1 to 2 months, they do a 3-day weekend course in mentorship for people getting into the property investment game. And then they can actually do one-on-one mentorship after that. And to anyone that's listening or, you know, or watching at the moment, if you're thinking about this, if you think about property, please seek mentorship. You can go and look at Wealth Mentors if you want to. I'm not saying that's the only one to go to. You might not have the right fit in there. That not might be the right place, but seek knowledge, seek the education, because as Stephen said, you won't know everything and it's impossible to it. And these are the people that you need to help you to make the step into property. But at the end of the day, Belinda, thank you so much. Stephen, thank you so much for joining in today's show and talking about your journey in the property and the cool things you both are doing as a couple together, you know, doing a power team and changing your lives from, you know, with property.
Cheers.
Cheers, Lawrence. Yeah. Nice chatting.
And to everyone else, you know, that's come over to the show today, if there's anything that's resonated, anything that you took from today's show that you thought was insightful that could help someone, I don't ask anything of my fans. I don't charge anything as part of my brand. But all I say is, if there is something, just send a friend over or send this to a friend and say, hey, have a listen, have a watch, because maybe together we can change each other's lives. We need our support. We need to be able to stand strong with each other today in 2020, the year that is the year of Jumanji, as I call it. But at the end of the day, we stay powerful, we stay beautiful. Until next time, see ya.